I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining on this week when it may not be the easiest to be entertained are journalist Margaret Wafler.
Hi there, Guy.
Hello, Margaret. How's your week going?
You know, for dystopia, not bad.
It's the first week of this Black Mirror that we're living in. And this week we have two very special guests. First up, she is one of my favorite comics here in Los Angeles. She is the co-host of Fights and Tights here on the Maximum Fun Network. And really, really great on Twitter. Tell people what your Twitter handle is so that they can follow you. Ms. Danielle Radford.
It's just Danielle Radford. I got it first.
That's understandable. Danielle, what should people know about you?
I like wrestling. I like nerd shit. I like reading stuff and getting really angry about it.
She's got a real good The Original Series medical or science staff Star Trek uniform.
True story.
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah. And also here, he's the host of Yo, Is This Racist? On the Earwolf Network, Mr. Andrew T.
What's up?
Andrew, what should the people know about you? Also, you're also allowed to say what your Twitter handle is.
Oh, shit. Thank you. And I hope I can swear.
Yes.
Andrew T. Last name is spelled T-I-A-N-D-R-A-W-T-I. I know it doesn't technically matter, but it's all caps.
But tell us about
the energy
yourself,
of it is all caps.
Tell us.
I do a racism-ish podcast that it kind of covers all sorts of bigotry. And it's a comedy when it needs to be and serious when it has to be. Mm-hmm. It's a thing that I've been doing for a long time. And it's either depressingly relevant or... You know, potentially given whatever the Ministry of Information decrees next.
Andrew, what is your favorite bigotry?
My favorite bigotry?
There's got to be something. What's your jam in terms of
I'm
bigotry?
I'm an anti-Slav man. Anyway, I just feel like it's given us a lot of good work.
Oh, in that sense, I think it's got to be Kill Whitey then.
Yeah.
Kill Whitey has all the best art under the racism fantasy team.
Reverse racism is the best racism because it's pretend.
Yeah, it does it because it doesn't hurt anyone.
Coming up on this week's show, for no particular reason, we're going to be talking about monsters. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Margaret, what are you all about this week?
I'm all about The Arrival. So I went to see this on Friday night, and it was the best kind of escape you could possibly imagine from all the just craziness of the election and the aftermath of the election. It's a very brainy sci-fi film with Amy Adams starring as a linguist who works on this case involving these aliens called heptapods, and they descend down onto planet Earth in these 12 separate pods all over the Earth, and all the different countries that have been kind of invaded by these pods are trying to figure out what these aliens want. And what do they want to harm us? Do they want to share something with us? What is it? So she gets on the case and basically cracks their language. And it's a really beautiful, smart, visionary kind of movie. It's a very literary science fiction movie. And, of course, I'm going to like that, considering that I wrote a book that has similar emotional import.
Yeah. Also full of inscrutable aliens inside of
yes.
ships. Yes.
For instance, there's this really beautiful scene where the first time you see them write in their language, and they're basically these kind of octopi-looking creatures, black, suspended in this kind of mist inside the pod, and they shoot out this ink from their, I don't know what you would call this, an octopus paw, we're going to say.
Yes.
And so they shoot out the ink, and it just makes this crazy symbol, and that's their language. So it's beautiful. I highly recommend going to see it.
So how much of an understanding of these heptapods does it give you? Because I'm always – I can feel cheated if it is too much of just a mystery.
It is just on the right side of that line.
Uh-huh.
You don't get much. You really don't get much.
It's understandable.
I mean, you get much more about the human characters, of course, as
yes.
alien movies always will do, is sort of shine the light back on us.
Right.
So Amy Adams and then her fellow scientist working on the case, Jeremy Renner, the two of them you learn a lot about.
Nice.
I'm trying not to spoil anything.
It's always hard, always hard. Danielle, what are you all about?
I am all about Insecure on HBO.
Yay.
It's a really fun show about two black chicks living in Los Angeles. I don't want to call it black girls, but it is. And I'm good with it.
Yeah.
It's really funny. You connect really easily to the characters while they're kind of like, you know, they both have their shit together in like different ways. And, you know, it's just kind of it's really nice because when people are like, what's it about? It's like, oh, it's just like about relationships and stuff.
Do you feel like it scrapes closer to reality than Girls?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely feel like it hews closer to a recognizable for reality, like anybody that I know. Like, they both live in like nice places, but they don't live in places where I'm like, you ain't got the salary for that.
Okay. On the subject of black female centered comedies, have you experienced chewing gum at all?
No, but I've heard it's amazing and it's on the list.
Yes. It's because it is not like there are ways that it is hyper realistic and ways that it is like bouncingly, my friend Zosha compared it to Kimmy Schmidt, and it really does have this outsized magical sense of comedy. It's a different show from Insecure, and I feel like I've had an easier way in because the comedy was more at the forefront. Winter, one of the hosts here, we were discussing last week the fact that I like hadn't fully fallen in love with Insecure, and she gave me a very firm, it's not for you. and I have to respect that.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like, it's one of those shows where people are like, what's it about? And it's like, yeah, it's just about, like, people and relationships and stuff. It's like, it's nice. We get a show. It doesn't have to be about shit.
Yeah.
There's, like, a million shows where it's just like, what's it about? Oh, just some dudes that hang out.
Yeah, not suffering this time.
Yeah, it's just a group of friends who hang out in apartments. It's like, no, this is just like two friends who are doing stuff. It's nice.
Though, honestly, I do feel like, not to directly address the elephant in the room, our inability to make TV shows about people in recognizable economic circumstances has been a problem for Hollywood. And having more shows come along that feel like people among all of their crazy hijinks also have to do their job and get their rent paid is a nice dose.
Yeah, it is. It's really, really nice.
Yeah.
And like I said, they have nice places, but I'm never like, you know, like, how are you affording that? What are you doing? You work at a coffee shop. It's like, no, they have the right job for that apartment.
Yeah.
That is the couch they would have.
Yeah.
That is their bed. It makes complete sense. It's really nice.
Andrew, what are you all about?
If I could just actually pitch one thing is instead of calling it Black Girls, we could retroactively just call Girls White Insecure.
That, wow. Yeah.
That's nice.
That
works.
It has a better
white
ring.
White Insecure.
Still very accurate. This week, I am all about, I know you guys talked about Westworld previously, and I'm only medium about Westworld the show. What I'm all about definitively is cockamamie theories about Westworld, because I have this little game. I watch Westworld every week with my friend, our mutual friend, Gabe Delahaye.
Yes.
And my...
Also, let's begin by saying we're going to be talking about Westworld, so there might be spoilers. Fucking deal with it. Like, move ahead if you have a problem with us discussing it, but you should be caught up on Westworld. What the fuck do you talk to your coworkers about? Sorry.
Actually, I'm about to spread enough disinformation that among the it's sort of irrelevant whether there are spoilers or not.
Reasonable. Keep going.
Because my thing is just whatever. If I can throw enough ridiculous takes at the wall to drive my friend crazy, that's my Westworld.
So,
my Westworld is trying to aggravate my friend.
Give us some gems.
I went from various, everyone's a Blade Runner. No one's a Blade Runner. Half Blade Runners, half Lawnmower Men.
Well, and also, Lawnmower Men, that's wonderful. Figuring out who's Gears and who's Goo, like, that's always fun, too.
It's just like...
Can we have a show called Gears and Goo?
Gears and Goo. When is this happening? And my favorite cockamamie theory, which is the one I put out on Twitter, which is that I want, ultimately, the last shot of Westworld, we zoom out and we see that Westworld is the struggling boutique, like, android fuck park in the middle of, like, you know, Jabba the Hutt's palace. And, like, you can be Iron Man for a day. Like, realistically, who goes to a fucking... We can't even get people to see Western movies. And, like, that's the big theme park that costs $40,000 a day. That is a true spoiler.
That's
it costs
wonderful.
$40,000 of an idiot.
No, but all right, let's sink our teeth in. Do you legitimately think that Dolores' white hat boyfriend is Ed Harris?
I think I, and this is for all the, I guess, Reddit heads out there, doesn't the timeline with her dad not sync up?
Well, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, because they, it's like technically possible that they could bring back first dad that you see in the cold open of the pilot, but they've swapped him out in what would be the earlier timeline.
Oh.
And then Ed Harris sees the older dad. And so it's not like technically impossible. I guess they could fucking cart him back in. But they have, it would be an annoying narrative thing if they did that. And I think we're at this stage where there's too many ridiculous things happening. So a time jump just seems like too much. Like, I just want to have the faith in our institutions like HBO to have someone say that's too many ridiculous things. I already gave you Blade Runners.
The only narratives I can solidly trust in this world are given to me by George R. R. Martin or mm-hmm. Amy Sherman Palladino. And one of those, like, is unsteady as things are. We'll see how season 7 goes. Danielle, this is not entirely on topic, but you're here in our studio and I have to ask you the question. Did America give Tandy Newton her due? Did we ever use her as much as we should?
No. I've been on Team Tandy forever.
Do you feel like this show is a major disservice to her? Because it is a lot of sitting naked. But now, Margaret, are you caught up?
I haven't seen the last episode, but okay. I do know that she sits naked about 2 episodes previously.
Yes. And like, she's... Her character has gone through some evolutions in the past couple of episodes. And I just wonder, as women, do you guys feel like the fun that she's getting to have and the coolness that she's getting to have makes up for the weirdness of having to be a woman in her 40s just like sitting there being naked and beautiful?
There is so much gratuitous nudity in it. And it's like, I understand that in the park you show the nudity so you can show how fucking terrible humans are. And then in like the other, you know, lab or whatever, you show the nudity to show how terrible humans are. Like, and how cold and sterile we see it and everything. We need more dicks.
Okay.
Yes.
We need more dicks and more dude butts.
I support that 100%.
Remember when there was a 3-way where a man was fucking a woman and then a dude was kind of touching him?
Yeah. We need more, like, yeah, well, and then there was the one where the, what's his name?
There was some robot dick. Remember
there was robot dick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to soapbox about something. It is a problem shared by Transparent and Westworld, which is, have I whined about this on the show before, Margaret?
No.
That people, interesting people like you and me, attracted to women, and nobody's really attracted to men. Like, people with active sexual lives, like the one sort of like sexually engaged woman we got on Westworld wanted to have sex with women. On Transparent, it's this weird world where you can be any sexuality as long as you're attracted to women. Like, there's nobody who's really attracted to men except for one trans man once and then, like, fucking Shelley Pfefferman, who we can barely say has a sexuality.
I bitched about this on the show that we did about Westworld and that I think the problem with that theme park to me is that it is such a hetero male fantasy that there's just no room so far for, like, a straight woman fantasy or a gay man fantasy. Like, any other kind of fantasy, like, is not accomplished there or not given heed. Like, why would you go there if you were me or you?
My coworker Chris Schleicher makes the assertion that, like, all the gay guys and women are in the Rome world where things are beautiful and perfumed and decadent.
But that's the other problem with Westworld is the real problem just structurally is all the other guests doing their thing and being horrible people ruins, like, okay, you're having dinner with your family, and then just someone just comes in and guns down every robot.
It's an MMO. That's what happens in an MMO.
Yeah.
You're just trying to go on your little quest, and then some asshole comes in and kills the person you need to talk to.
Like, excuse me, I was enjoying that steak, and now it's got robot parts all over it.
Yeah.
You got to send it back in that case.
Excuse me.
I was, like, I've been, like, not here a lot in the recent past. It means that there have been a lot of all-abouts that I did not get to talk about, and I was very excited to talk about Moonlight, and I was very excited to talk about The Crown. But in this very special week when we all need to be positive and remember what's lovely, even though Moonlight and The Crown are both really, really awesome, you should fucking watch The Crown. It's really good.
I've heard. That one's also on the list.
All right. You as well. You can if you want
I'll
to.
I'll watch it.
But I feel like you'll be less delighted by what a amazing bitch Princess Margaret was in the 50s. Like, Margaret Wobbler will just come back and want to smoke with me. And we won't, but we'll want to.
We will.
So what I want to talk about is episode 3, season 3 of Black Mirror, called San Junipero. Has anyone here seen it?
I want to see it so bad that, Guy, I might not listen while you're spoiling it.
I'm not going to spoil it. Okay. I don't want to spoil it. I just want to say it is so beautiful. And it has gayness to it. And I find that the first explicitly gay Black Mirror is one that is also maybe the first explicitly optimistic about technology Black Mirrors is so wonderful and heartwarming. Understand that, like, for some people, horrifying nightmare future is paradise, is really wonderful. It's beautiful. I didn't get what the talk was about Gugu Mbatha-Ra. I just knew that she had a funny name until I saw this, and I was like, well, hello. I am on board. And it is just, it made me so happy. It made me so filled with optimism. Part of the problem with narratives about gayness, there are two big problems. One of them is the fact that where is the end, which is always the question of straight people get together and there is the premise of a baby and forever. And with us, that is less clear. And this has a lovely end. But the other thing is how do you address gayness honestly without letting melodrama take over and let us be in a place of sadness? And this narrative really does hit on some of the harder, rougher facts that, like, go into the way that we live, but it is so fucking optimistic, which may have been a spoiler in its way, but I'm sorry, Margaret.
It's okay.
Wonderful. All right, you guys are listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back to talk about monsters after this.
Instead of door busting for a plasma TV this Black Friday, how about you stay in and snag the best deal of all? Max FunCon 2017 tickets. Max FunCon West returns to Lake Arrowhead next June, and Max FunCon East is back in the Poconos next September. Tickets for both go on sale Friday, November 25th, and they're gonna sell out fast. So mark your calendars and visit maxfuncon.com on November 25th to secure your spot. Max FunCon, way more fun than a smartwatch or whatever.
I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa. And we host the weekly comedy podcast, One Bad Mother.
We celebrate our moments of parenting genius.
As well as our failures.
Just like, we're going to have hot dogs. And I'm like, oh, no, we're having fun. Everybody loves hot dogs.
Yeah.
And it just like smashes that thing right on my chest. And then I'm just crying in the middle of like kids' space while people are like literally dancing with their children.
Parenting can be sad and painfully funny at the same time.
So join us each week as we admit that this is hard, but we're getting really good at it.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Margaret Wobbler,
Andrew T,
Danielle Radford.
So this week I thought, unrelated to anything else that has been going on in American society, it might might be interesting and cathartic to talk about the monsters in TV, movies, and literature that have frightened us most, that we have connected with most, and that meant the most to us. Why don't we start out with some monstery energy?
Why don't you look at yourself and write down what you see? Maybe you're frightened.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Beautiful.
Oh, Hannibal. He's got such good taste. I love fava beans, too. And Chianti.
Margaret, what was the first movie monster you remember being scared of?
It's a tie. I think it might have either been The Blob, which I saw like when I was 6 years old on like TBS at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday or something like that. Or The Exorcist Little Girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It is a movie, but like my parents had sent me to my room to not watch while they were watching the TV movie of Salem's Lot. And I like came in to ask my mom something right as a vampire like crashed up through the floor. And
was it like hovering outside the window?
The thing is, this is so just like a photocopy of a photocopy of a memory. I just remember it crashed through something, and in my head it was the floor. And then I was so scared of something crashing up through the floor of my bedroom. I didn't understand the law of vampires cannot enter unless you have invited them at that point in time. But it scared me for such a long time. Radford.
The first thing that really got me was Chucky.
Oh.
I did not. And I liked horror movies
Chucky
before then.
Scary.
Yeah, I liked horror movies before then. I would, like, watch all of, like, the Nightmare on Elm Streets. I loved Freddy. I loved all of them. And it was just, like, I went to watch Chucky thinking it wasn't going to be anything. And just, like, I think
Chucky was supposed to be funny. I've never watched any of them.
There's a moment in, like, the beginning of the movie where the dude is, like, putting the spell into the doll. That's really was I found it very disturbing as a kid. And then, like, the whole movie, I didn't like it. And then there's a point where the doll is trying to put the spell on the little boy, and it's really creepy. And it's just that, like, I think it's a combination of, like, obviously, like, killer doll and a lot of gore and whatever, and then just that, like, uncanny valley thing. And so it got to be where, like, when a Chucky commercial or something would come on, I couldn't even be in the room.
I don't know if this counts, actually, but the first monster that scared me was, I guess, the scientist Skeksy from Dark Crystal.
Oh, no. Oh, okay.
Oh.
Does that count?
No, absolutely. Andrew, the thing I love most about the Dark Crystal is I am an adult man, and when I watch it, it still scares me, because the first time I saw it, it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. They're really unnerving. Yeah. And I remember I wasn't allowed to watch the whole thing. I must have actually just come into I grew up in Michigan, and a thing that immigrants do in Michigan is they just have the TV on and put all their kids in the same room no matter what age and how inappropriate the show or movie might be. And I think I remember dropping into the middle of Dark Crystal and having to leave. I must have been, I don't know, 6 or 7 or something, and like just being like, nope, this is too scary. But they're unnerving the way they move, too, the puppetry.
But you get that feminist moment when the girl Gelfling gets wings and the boy doesn't. And it was a moment of empowerment that worked for a 5-year-old me. okay, so what is – like, we all mentioned very sort of like – well, those were our first, but like very visible monsters. What is scarier, monsters you can see or monsters you can't see?
I think monsters you can see.
Okay. Go with that.
Just because I can see them. Like, it's literally like, I wish it was something else, but it's like, I can see them. It's like if it's a thing where you can see the monster and then you can't see them, that's terrifying, because that's like bed bugs.
Yeah.
Like, once you know you have a bed bug, then everything is like, or like if you know that if you see one roach, and then you're like, oh man, that means there's like a million roaches.
Yeah.
But if I haven't seen it, I can just pretend like it doesn't exist.
I mean, the dissatisfaction of something always being slightly out of frame makes me so angry, but also so unsettled.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's way more scarier not to see them. I think in The Mist, for instance, the fact that the mist just comes and the monsters are rather embedded in the mist, and you don't ever really see them. You kind of see a foggy outline, but you don't really see them. And that, to me, is terrifying, because you don't know what you're battling.
Let us speak for a moment of The Village. A movie that is not a bad, like, it's not a bad movie until you fucking see those things. And they are so cheap and so terrible that it's like, what the fuck am I supposed to be scared of here?
That's the problem, too, is that so often when the reveal comes, it's like, what?
Yeah.
That's the thing that we're all supposed to be running scared from?
Were people here satisfied or dissatisfied with the Demogorgon from Stranger Things? Did you feel like that was a good monster or an underwhelming monster?
That was on my post-election gonna watch it when things are called down list. So I haven't seen it yet.
What the fuck are you doing?
I was trying to chill, you know, trying to do election shit, man.
I respect that.
Sadly, I haven't gotten there yet either.
Margaret!
I know, it's disgusting.
Margaret, please. Margaret, if that leads to you not getting, or to us not getting enough 5-star reviews, and something happens to you, it's not my fucking fault.
I'll hold the listeners hostage. If everyone gives in a 5-star review, I'll watch Stranger Things.
Okay. Margaret asked she brought up a really wonderful thing that, like, monsters are reflective of the world around us. Like, Godzilla is all about the fear of nuclear power. Invasion of the Body Snatchers is all about communism. And what, like, what sort of monsters do you think reflect the world that we are living in right now?
I'm laughing, but I don't have a good... I feel like it's going to be something that is... It's got to be more insidious because we're at a sort of precipice and this is going to be alarmist. But, you know, we have like brother against brother civil war type vibes going on right now. So there is going to be a monster within type thing, I think.
Yeah, I think something like will sapping or sort of like just the – to me, like the fear of the present moment is sort of like – people losing their will and capacity to resist and stuff like that. So if I don't know if it will be a vampire or something like that. But
I think we're going to see, or I hope we see, fame monsters.
Uh-huh.
People that basically were birthed in the roiling baths of reality TV fame.
Oh.
And I'm not thinking of anyone in particular. But honestly, the kind of mechanism in a person that makes them do anything and everything to have eyes on them.
Oh, Margaret.
I think it's becoming
a wonderful pitch, Margaret. What a wonderful pitch.
Yeah, do you want to work on this?
Somebody who gets that taste of fame doesn't get it. I mean, that's the look, as I learned in that year after I left Chelsea Lately, it's the hardest score to get. Like, it's not, you can't just, you know, like, suck a dick for that. It depends on the dick.
Sure.
But yeah, having somebody go and become like a spree murderer because that's the thing that like makes them famous again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Margaret, I think that's a solid pitch.
Okay, we're gonna work on this. Let's talk.
Pitch it. I think it's still Chucky. Orange thing, little hands, kind of a puppet.
That works.
Okay. Like, when I go in my head to, like, the thing that scares me most, like, and this is breaking the boundaries of what we're talking about here, but, like, when I think about the monster from a movie that has scared me most, it is Deborah Rupp from Clock Watchers as the HR lady. Does anyone here remember this?
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of it.
Clock Watchers was like Parker Posey, Tony Collette
movie.
And
I remember Clock Watchers. I just can't think of that
character. So the woman who essentially played their supervisor was the mom from That 70s Show, who was a woman who always had a smile on her face and was never nice. And, like, was always the semblance of nice, but underneath it was always just a cruelty and demand for what she needed. And it is the thing that is, like, so much more unsettling to me than like a doll or a witch is this sort of like, because that's the kind of monster you meet in real life.
The cold bureaucrat.
And like, what are the things that really to this day sort of like chill you or unsettle you monster wise? Broadest definition of monster.
I was going to say, actually, I should have jumped in with my other scariest monster situation, which is, or the actual scariest thing movie-wise I've ever seen is Event Horizon, which is really, there's a little bit of hell in it, but it's basically
what was that?
Event Horizon, a ship goes through a black hole, disappears, comes back, and no one, everyone on it is evidently dead, and no one knows what happened. So our salvage ship goes out to rescue it, and spoiler alert, this movie's about 25 years old. The ship has gone through hell, and everyone went mad on board. And it's unclear whether the people who are on the salvage rescue ship are also going mad. And so space madness is my scary. It's sort of like Sunshine, if you've seen Sunshine.
It's very similar. Yeah.
But I think there's – I mean, I was going to say the most on-the-nose version of what the psychology of today is going to lead us to is something like that where we turn against each other or you start acting differently. But I think you're right about the vampire thing, which sort of pointed to the fact that it's always like a sort of unexpected metaphor. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the nuclear thing to Godzilla makes sense. But it's not as direct. I mean, you could also, Japanese people could have also just been afraid of nuclear bombs.
Right.
You know.
But the thing is you need to shield it in some way. Like, the thing I find most fascinating is when we go to war, we get more horror movies. And the way that we need to sort of, like, address things emotionally, but you can't do it head on.
Right.
Danielle, do you have a grab for just all-out scariest monster you've experienced?
I don't even know if this is a scary monster. The thing that I hate the most, it's part of the reason why I'm not, like, a huge, huge fan of horror movies, I don't like jump scares. Uh-huh. And I think it's just, like, I don't like that idea of, like, you think you're safe, and then you're hella not safe.
I'm so tired. Like, the thing is now action movies, like, that action movies took Carrie and took it to the point of, and it, like, this thing you think is dead comes back three times.
Yeah.
So tired of it. Also, not a fan of a jump scare. That is not a kind of movie that I like to watch. I've gotten better about it as time has gone on, but it's annoying. I mean,
I'm a shrieker. I'll shriek.
The magic of Carrie will never be lost. I mean, that is a great moment.
It's a great moment.
I was going to chime in about Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, please.
Because to me, the scariest monster is the monster who can get really close to you or who is really close to you and is gaslighting the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
Mm. And Rosemary's Baby, I'm going to spoil it for those of you who haven't seen it in the last 40 years since it's been out. But Mia Farrow's husband plays the ultimate gaslighting husband, in that he keeps telling her that all of her hallucinations are just her, you know, brain going off, and that there's nothing there. And turns out he's like part of the coven, kind of pulling her in.
Well, the other great thing about that movie is Ruth, what's her name?
Kindly maternal neighbor,
and also being so banal, like being kind of trashy to an extent that it isn't sort of like the high gothic kind of thing that you're used to. This woman just seems so, like, a little bit trashy enough that, like, she can't possibly be insidious, but she is the most insidious.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this, like, the taking the people that you're supposed to trust the most on the world, this mother figure and this husband, and having them turn against the main character is so powerful to me and so scary.
All right. Of the most classic and 1950s of monsters, what is your favorite? Of just, like, your vampire, your werewolf, your swamp thing, your mummy. And I'm talking your serial monsters. Which is your favorite?
Are we counting the 50-foot woman as a monster?
Sure.
Yeah, I just think that she's great.
She's dope.
She's dope. She's great.
She crushes, dude, literally.
Yeah, woman crush Wednesday. She just crushes stuff.
So, like, that's interesting. That's basically sort of like, also, what a nicely prescient movie that, hey, modernity may give, like, women the capacity to have power in a way that they did not have before. Let's all be terrified of that.
Right.
Well, that's like a good 50s movie convention, too. You take the other and you just make them really huge.
Yes. When did we start letting race get into our horror movies? Was that the 70s?
I mean, it's debatable that it was always there. I mean, the vampire. I mean, Bela Lugosi is a type of other and sort of racialized.
It's a Jew.
Yes.
There was a specific controversy in Britain where one of the parties got a Jewish leader, and a woman in the party, like, started making vampire jokes about him. And it was like, all right. And we do love blood. It's delicious. but Margaret, what's your favorite classic monster?
I mean, can I go back to the blob?
Yes,
the blob
absolutely
scared the shit out of me. The fact that it could just, like, seep under doors, it could go anywhere. That also, I don't think we've covered this at all, but the virus monster, which is another kind of monster you can't see, that can just infect and get everywhere.
Did anyone see It Follows?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I haven't seen it, but that's a monster that's an STD, right?
Yes.
Correct.
It'll spread through sex.
See it. You'll see it, like, a couple times.
Is satisfying.
It's because it's a shapeshifter.
Oh, okay.
You should watch it. It's a terrific movie. It really is. It is a movie about photography ultimately, because it's really just about, like, teaching people to look at all corners of the screen.
Oh.
I'm a big fan of it.
I find that tiring.
It's exhausting.
favorite classic monster.
I really like a swamp thing.
Okay.
I like a swamp thing. I like hanging out in the muck, I guess.
Where are you at with the Loch Ness monster? Is that
that doesn't count. I think that's just a dragon. I mean like a creature from the Black Lagoon, Alan Moore's swamp thing kind of mustache man.
When does the Loch Ness monster, when does he ever actually destroy anything or kill anyone? That's my question.
Yeah, Nessie's pretty sweet, isn't she?
All right. I asked this entire boring question just so I could say, Frankenstein, fascinating.
That's not 50s.
I know, but I just want – he's one of your classic monsters.
He's one of the universal serials.
Yeah, he's one of the universal.
But my question is to the women on this panel, why is Frankenstein's monster a thing we got from a female creator? I mean, it seems to be going at the idea of male generativity, like men's aggressive attempt to, like, make life as being disgusting or weird. But I just wondered if you had any insight into the brain of your fellow double X chromosome, Mary Shelley.
Well, I do think there's something interesting there about the creator, right? Like, right. The creator gives birth to this creature that turns against it. And I think that is inherently some kind of, like, feminine nightmare.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, that if you have a child, that they're not going to be like you, or that they could even, you know, be against you. Which I think, you know, a movie like The Omen plays into as well.
Right. And also that idea that, like, you have a kid and the kid turns out to be even not necessarily, like, bad, but just, like, weird.
Yeah.
And then suddenly here come the pitchforks because, like, you've got this weird kid with, like, you know, a weird borrowed brain or whatever.
Mm-hmm. What's scarier? Like, single, insidious, intelligent, very powerful monster, or something zombie-ish, something widespread, something... Because we had, like, a real zombie run there in movies for a while, a couple of years ago, right?
Sure, and The Walking Dead. And,
yeah.
I think something widespread, if only because, like, you'll always feel like if it's, like, you know, a single thing or a person, you'll always feel like you can negotiate it. You're not negotiating with zombies.
Yeah.
Zombies don't have a position. Mm-hmm. If you were like, what do you want? They're just like brains. It's like, well, we can't. It's like, well, that's all we want, and there's more of us. Like, mm-hmm. there's nothing you can give a zombie aside from your own life that, like, they want. Whereas with the other kind of evil, you'll always at least feel like maybe there's something you can do to, like, affect it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like zombies are, like, and this maybe speaks to my own psychology, is they're less scary because they just feel like another fact of nature. And I know, like, for instance, people are afraid of earthquakes. I'm personally, like, I don't want to die in an earthquake, but it doesn't, it just is like, I don't know, it's just that thing that happens.
Earthquakes are fine.
Well, sure,
but
or like...
Yeah, you're in Los Angeles, do you know what I mean?
Right, like, but look, any natural disaster, I guess,
to
is
an
what
earthquake.
I mean.
An earthquake lasts 5 minutes and some people in Northridge die. It's not like a blizzard that inconveniences all of us.
But I guess what I mean is it's so outside of one's control that it doesn't scare me. I know it would scare some. It can scare other people, but it doesn't scare me.
I guess. Do wonder, though, if we're going to start to see more environmental disaster movies, because that's actually something that's coming up in literature more often, is the sort of dystopia that's created from abusing our world, basically. And I feel like...
Fucking Atwood.
Yeah, fucking Atwood is right. And, like, I feel like we're going to see that more and more in movies.
Yeah, that Incorporated show has got a base of, like... We fucked up the world, so corporations had to take over.
What is Incorporated?
It's going to be a sci-fi show, and it's basically like, you know, the world's all messed up, and there winds up being all these superstorms. And so, like, people kind of, like, the government, like, winds up kind of losing control because it's too much. And so slowly there becomes, like, the privatization of, like, everything.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, until you get to the point where everything's...
I want to watch that.
Yeah, everything's just, like, one corporation, essentially, because it buys all the other ones. So there's, like, two corporations... and then, if you work for the corporation and they like you, then you live in, like, the green zone. And if you don't, then you're just fucked and you live in the red zone.
Wow.
And it's about, like, a red zone dude who, like, cons his way into the green zone.
Oh, that's really fun.
To, like, take it down from the inside.
About environmental monsters, was the birds ever scary or was it always just campy?
I thought the birds was scary, but I saw it when I was little.
Yeah.
I still think it's kind of scary. I mean, I saw a clip of it recently, and I was like, they did a good job.
God, I love that movie. So which is scarier? Like a human monster, like a serial killer, like, or like an inhuman monster? Like, your Freddies, your vampires. What's scarier?
I know that there's that thing of always like, oh, it's so messed up to think about what we do to each other. We're the biggest monsters of us all. But it's like, nah, I can kill you with a bullet. Like, that's like, I can't, like, Freddy's got, like, Freddy just chills in your dreams. That's way scarier because I can't, like.
Freddy's one of the best because there's something so deeply human about the fact that he's made of dreams.
Right. You know? Yeah. So I just think that, like, yeah, the humans, I can, you can straight up murder a human.
But I mean, isn't the reason we all love true crime and listening to My Favorite Murder and that kind of stuff is sort of like remembering that, like, there are monsters everywhere around us. And, like, I think I probably am more settled by a good portrayal of, like, a person who is broken in one of the horrible ways inside. I just feel like you don't get really good psychologies of that well, and I have enough mentally ill people in my family that, like, I want the authenticity. Margaret, which is better or worse?
I still think human monsters are scarier, and part of it is just because I have better expectations for fellow humans.
Yeah.
I think there's something innately scary about a human being so shut down that they are not considering you as another human with feelings and emotions. I mean, I always think about, like, the footage that we've all seen of, like, Jeffrey Dahmer in Trials, and,
yeah,
like, the look in his eye is just so incredibly dead that terrifies me.
Okay. Same question, different topic. American Psycho, was it ever scary or is it just camp?
American Psycho to me is too much of a critique about, like, capitalism and just, like, corporate,
yeah,
culture run amok that I don't get as scared about that. I mean, it's satire. It's something,
yeah,
else.
Though, I mean, that may be the best answer for the horror for now is American Psycho meets Eric Trump as horror movie. Like,
totally.
The line between stop it, guy. This is not the place for that.
I think by the same logic, I'm more scared of a human monster, maybe because they're vulnerable. And there's a thing where it's like, this is just scarier and more visceral and has more realness. Whereas, like, being taken down by something supernatural is just like, eh, I don't know.
Yeah, it's sort of impersonal, the supernatural.
Yeah, it's not personal to them.
I mean, sort of one of our biggest subgenres of the human monster movie is the Holocaust movie. And,
yes,
like, did we get to that point where we were just so used to showing that person that we stopped looking into that person?
Well, before we met up for the show, I was watching Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
And, you know, he plays this incredibly cartoonish Nazi officer.
Yeah.
And I do feel like we've gotten to a place where we've seen that character so much that you had to sort of cartoonize him a little bit.
Right.
That to just make his villainy, like, completely of the comic book world in a sense.
Because when you think back to Ralph Fiennes, which is kind of Ralph Fiennes in Schindler's List,
yes,
which is kind of that character is so much the thing that we know, and it is so Isn't He Dastardly, that I just feel like that's not scary and it's not interesting because it's just like, yeah, we all know that. That's a Nazi. Nazis don't exist.
Well, the thing about that character that also is additionally monstrous about him is that he's attracted to a Jewish woman and it's,
yes,
such a horror to him that it makes him spin out even more.
See, like, to me, he'll never be as scary as either Marathon Man, and then what's the one where they, and Boys from Brazil. Like, both of those Nazis really were just sort of giving me this person who's, like, bent on something and will stop at nothing to get it done.
I think the thing is we were humanizing Nazis real quick after World War II. So it's like, I mean, or not humanizing, but sanitizing,
yeah,
Nazis real quick. So it's like, I mean, there's a part that's like, I mean,
what do you mean sanitizing?
Like a Hogan's Heroes,
oh, okay,
sort of thing, which is just like, I don't know. I maybe there just is like a natural, like, for the mass psychology, we just have to, like, put some distance between these things, and it's inevitable that we will forget what the evil is.
And to bring this a step closer to the real right now, like, one of my core criticisms of civil rights movies that have happened over the, like, let's say 1965 to, like, now, is this creation of two types of white people, monster racist white people, and then people like us, you know, because, mm-hmm, we would have been cool. And in sort of stylizing the racism, it, like, removes the gentler racism from the people who are.
Yeah. It makes me think about Mississippi Burning, which has depictions of all sorts of racist KKK type of members in the South. And they are, I mean, it is so absurdly over the top that it like, it kind of cancels out what they really are in a weird sense.
And so now it's like, oh, well, I can't be racist. I'm not burning crosses.
Yeah. Right. Right. You know what did it really well, actually, is the public access episode of Atlanta, where sort of the liberal white ladies, you know, allegiances were sort of shifting a little bit, and Paperboys, like, everyone was, like, moving around in a much more complex way, and it was a great episode.
You've been listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this. Pop Rocket is supported by HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. This week, I got a box from HelloFresh, and it had several lovely meals in it, including this really cute, like, salmon and pesto thing that I made and then baked in little packets of tinfoil, and you opened it up, and there was all full of loveliness inside. And it's so perfect and just enough for two people, and it's great. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned at-home cooks, short on time. Like, I'm somebody who loves to cook, but the convenience of having something come to my house, like, with exactly the amount of ingredients that I need, like, perfectly ready to go is pretty great. They source really fresh ingredients measured to the exact quantities needed so there's no food waste. And all of it is delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter promo code ROCKET when you subscribe. Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Margaret Wappler.
Andrew T.
And Danielle Radford.
Now, Andrew, this is your first time on our show.
Correct.
I realize you may not be familiar with it. I'm presuming that you've never listened to it.
I listened to one episode right after you
DM'd
me.
That's very sweet. That's very kind of you.
Thank you.
Andrew, did you happen to pick up during the course of that episode what the question is that we ask of our panel every week?
Wait, the what is your jam one?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah.
Andrew T., what is your jam?
This is a little bit of a reach because it's actually not something I've been listening to a lot, but I've been thinking about it a lot, which is the chopped and screwed version of Jadina's classic man that plays in the movie Moonlight in the last scene, basically, or just before the last scene when they're in the car in the diner in Miami.
Let's hear it. Even if you're good, I'm a classic man. You can be me when you look this clean. I'm a classic man. Calling on me like a young OG. I'm a classic man. Why is it speaking to you right now?
I mean, honestly, it was a confluence of many things. A, I've been just thinking about it a lot. It's just been popping into my head. And without doing too much virtue signaling, as a straight dude, I have to say, I loved Moonlight so much. Not as a straight dude, but it was one of the things I wanted to bring up just because it was possibly the only good thing that's happened in 2016. I guess we'll find out.
Well, you know, my ongoing insistence is that Moonlight is Carol for straight guys.
Yeah.
Carol with enough markers of your culture that you can accept it.
Right. It's like, you like The Wire, right? What if it was just the gay parts of The Wire? There you go.
It's a great movie. Danielle, what is your jam?
My jam is the Daddy Lessons by Beyoncé featuring the Dixie Chicks.
Now, to clarify, this was my jam 2 weeks ago, but we're doing it again because we should, because it's the best thing to happen in a long time.
Yeah, it's so good.
Let's hear it. But Daddy left with a whiskey to see. Tell me about your relationship to this moment at the CMAs.
Well, I became a fan of the Dixie Chicks when I was in high school because they were dope. And it was just like that moment. I enjoy country. I like bluegrass. I like parts of country. One of my favorite TV shows is like Nashville.
Yeah.
So like I enjoy some country, but it's like not, you know, I know, what, we got Hootie? Who do we have? We have no.
Since the loss of Charlie Pride, yeah. It's been
all Hoot all the time. And so when Daddy Lessons came out on Lemonade, I was like, this is amazing, and wouldn't it be so great? But it'll never happen, but wouldn't it be so great? And so not only for her to, like, go to the CMAs, people were, like, writing on Twitter. They were, like, writing to the Dixie Chicks, like, I don't understand why they brought Beyonce. And the Chicks were like, oh, no, honey, she brought us. Because they've still, no one holds a grudge like country, apparently. Yeah. So they're still, like, they haven't been invited. And I love that the idea of Beyonce being like, I love this thing you did with the song. You from Texas. I'm from Texas. Yeah. Fuck these people. You're on my stage. You're playing that fiddle.
It was lovely. And, like, the swapping out of the Zydeco for sort of like, Emily and Marty, like, going at it with the fiddle and the banjo. It's so good. It's so amazing. And also having that moment of reconnection that basically, like, there are parts of Southern culture that have been able to stay with African Americans living in the North and or in the South, and there are parts that, like, have been culturally kind of blocked off. Like,
right.
Black people don't have a comfortable space in the country that exists today, and it was really awesome. Margaret Wappler, where's your jam? Oh, also, I have no jam this week. So, Margaret, will you
I'll close it
off?
Out. Yes. I'll close it out. It's the right man to close it out with, actually. Leonard Cohen died last week. And it was right around the election, and it felt like, oh, my God, one of our great poet, visionary musicians is leaving us. Along with Gwen Ifill, that was another one that really hit me hard. Like, this is not the time for Gwen Ifill to leave the scene. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We need her. But Leonard Cohen, I absolutely love his first album, which is from 1967, and it has Suzanne and So Long, Marianne, and all the great songs that we know him for. And I was set up a couple to play at the end of the show, but then one of the listeners tweeted at me to play Everybody Knows, and I listened to it and I was like, you're absolutely right, Jeff Holtby. So let's listen to Everybody Knows.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Margaret.
Although, I can't hear that without seeing that scene of King of Kong. They play that at, like, the end of the movie. It's a great movie if you haven't seen it.
I was going to say, that song is in every movie.
It's in everything. But there's just that moment where, like, the really cocky guy is like, no, I'm going to win the arcade thing, or, like, whatever. And then the other guy's like, no, but I thought I won the arcade thing. And they're, like, playing that in the background, and now that's all that I ever see.
It's a great movie. All right, you guys have been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Brand, with Margaret Wappler and our special guest, Danielle Radford. Danielle, remind us again where we can learn more about you.
You can find me at Danielle Radford on Twitter. You can find me on my wrestling podcast, Tights and Fights. You can find me usually on Tuesdays at Screen Junkies News, being a real big nerd. And then anything else that's important, I'll tweet it.
And Andrew Chi. No, Andrew. Our listeners learn more about you.
Twitter, I'm not being particularly funny these days, but it's Andrew T, A-N-D-R-E-W-T-I. And my podcast is called Yo, Is This Racist? Spoiler alert, if you had to call to ask a fucking stranger on the internet, you already know the answer is yes. And I'll just say now the answer will be yes for
not in this new America, Andrew.
Who knows?
Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Muzo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Chaz U Bell and Lil Mill Share for the 5-star reviews in iTunes. That's two. That's a little anemic. If you haven't already, please review us. If you've got anything you want to share about this week's topics, you can join the conversation on our Facebook group or tweet at us. We are at Pop Rocket. We are a production of Maximum Fun, and our producers are the absent Christian Duenas and the new, the delightful Kara Hart.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.